All right, metalheads, this is DJ Rem, Quote the Raven, live on Rock Attic Radio, and I have Zach from the band Dead Animal Assembly Plant. What's up, brother?
Hey, how's it going?
I am doing great. Thanks so much again for taking time to call in to do the interview. Much appreciated.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Give a big shout out to my brother Carl for hooking us up and getting us helping put this together. So he never fails for helping me get good bands. So appreciate him.
Oh, good old Carl. I mean, he's been such a big supporter of, I can't even say just our band, but like every band, the whole scene.
Right on.
He pushes so much metal music on everyone and shares everyone's stuff. Doesn't matter where you're at or even what genre of metal. He's always been such a supportive guy. I really appreciate him.
Yep, absolutely. So let's start, if you could introduce yourself and your spot in the band, and then also the others that are not with us tonight.
Well, my name is Zach Wieger. I am, I guess, the founder of a Dead Animal Assembly Plant. Live-wise, I'm the vocalist behind the scenes. I do a lot of the production work, and as a collective, we all write the music together. So the other ones in the band would be my wife, Rebecca Buzz Wager, Eric Bergen, Jason Moore, Nick Snyder, and then we've had, you know, over the years, we've had band members come and go. So on this newest album that's coming out, we did have additional work with a former guitarist named Reggie, so.
Badass. And so how long have you guys been around as a band?
So our first live show was March of 2011. So that was our first live show. Before that, it was just kind of a solo side project for me that I started probably around 2007, 2008. But for a number of years, it was just me kind of just tinkering around by myself, experimenting with what little I knew about writing music, and just kind of evolved from there.
So when it went from that to being a full-fledged, you know, band, what drove that all to happen? Was there like a turning point?
Yeah, there was the turning point. So the Dead Animal Assembly Plant started, I mentioned, as a solo side project. I was working with a friend on his band called Bound in Oblivion. And so Dead Animal Assembly Plant became kind of like my idea, where the ideas didn't fit for his project, so I would start kind of funneling to that. So after a few years of working on that, I want to start doing live shows, but I didn't want it to be just like industrial karaoke where it's just me up there with like a laptop or anything like that, because I always kind of swore to myself that if I was going to ever start doing live shows, that I wanted to actually have a live show, you know, bring something more to the stage, because, you know, if people are going to take the time and the money to come out and see you, they deserve a show.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So how often, so the band, and when, I just totally lost my train of thought. When is this new album coming out?
So the new album, we finished it right before we went out on tour. And while we were on tour, it was being mixed. And when we got back, there was some final mixing that needed to be done. And then it just got mastered. So it's completely done. It's mastered and everything. What we want to do is kind of farm it out to labels to see if anyone will pick it up. Right. And that'll kind of drive the release date. If for some reason no one picks it up and we release it independently, then we'll release it sooner than later, since we don't want to sit on it for too long. But we'll see what happens.
Excellent. And what studio did you use for recording and mixing?
So recording is kind of was a mishmash. We did most of the recording at, I have a small studio at my place. So we did most of the recording there. Eric, the other guitarist who used to be the drummer, he lives in Irvine, California. So he would record guitar parts at his little home studio and send it to me. So it was kind of like a hodgepodge of different places. And we had it mixed and mastered locally in Portland.
Okay, very good. And what's the title of the new album that's coming out?
The title of the new album is Bring Out the Dead.
Excellent. And how'd you guys come up with the name for the album?
So we were tossing around a lot of different names. As the album kind of started to unravel more and more songs were being written, we were trying to think of an album name. And I had come up with a few and kind of presented them to everyone. So this is a democracy, so everyone gets a say, everyone gets like a vote. So I had some ideas, threw them out there. It didn't really float. So one of the songs, the introduction song on the album, is a song called Cemetery Slums. And it is kind of like a chanty, culty kind of song. And the one of the lines is bring out the dead. So just kind of milling everything over, I'm just like, well, why not call it that?
Yeah.
I mean, and then I kind of threw that out there with everyone, and they went along with it. So it's kind of how it happened.
Oh, that's badass. I have to tell you, so the first time I saw your video, Rise With Me, that song is fucking badass. And the video is so cool. Did Carl do that video with you guys?
Yes, yeah. Carl Winery.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's amazing. So he's on all of our videos. He did that one. He did the video for our cover of God's Gonna Cut You Down, which is funny because we released that a few years ago and then saw that Marilyn Manson just released his video. I'm just like, ah, that bastard. And then Carl, a week before we went on tour, we actually filmed a video for our new album, a song called A Violent Breed. So that's in post right now. Carl is editing it right now. So
excellent.
I'm really looking forward to releasing that because I feel like with Rise, that was my introduction to Carl. I knew him, but I didn't really know him that well before working with him on that. And I just feel like with him, he just caught it immediately. Like, even the vague ideas that I gave him, he really kind of took hold of it and made it into sounds. That's why I love working with him.
Yeah, that song, between the song and the video, I don't know, I feel like it's just so powerful. Is there, you know, with that song, Rise With Me, I mean, you know, obviously you can listen to lyrics and stuff, but I guess really what were, you know, for you as a band, as a singer, kind of where were you going with that song, I guess? What were you trying to portray?
Well, the song lyrically is definitely like an indictment on society, mainstream media, and how they exploit all these tragedies, these mass shootings, and whether it's at the mall or it's at a school, you know, they're always on scene. They're always trying to get the most graphic shot. They're trying to get the most in-depth interviews. They're going to, you know, it's almost like it becomes a video game where they talk about the high score, the high amounts, and what the kill count is. Like, oh, only a few people died or no one died. Well, we're not even going to bother putting it on the news. You know, so you have this, people are inundated day in and day out with all this nonstop exploitation. And, you know, you just have to shake the crazy tree a little bit and it's going to influence some people. So
right.
The song pretty much is a, you know, kind of pointing the finger back at all of us. It's the news and media and society and everything that, you know, we're all a little to blame for this.
Yeah, you hit that one right on. Yeah, that's awesome. Very cool. So, how'd you come up with the name for the band? Where does Dead Animal, you know, Dead Animal Assembly plant? And the reason that it kind of, when I first saw you, you know, I was like, man, that's badass. It's metal. And I was a butcher for 15 years, so that one really, nice. That run really got me. So I was like on board as soon as I saw. As soon as I saw the band name. So where's it come from, though?
So the name itself, there's like the mythos, and then there's the factual. So the mythos surrounds the Sweet Meat Slaughterhouse and how a German immigrant butcher came over and started slaughtering people and feeding them to the townsfolk, and then they exact revenge on him. So that's where like the mythos comes from. The factual side of it is, a number of years ago, I was looking at business licenses online, and in the state of Oregon, you have, in order to transport or store animal carcasses, you need a business license called the Dead Animal Assembly Plant.
Oh wow!
Like that's the actual name of the business license.
Interesting.
Yeah. So, and when I saw that, I just thought like the name itself was just absurd, and the concept behind it was even more absurd. Like you needed a business license for this really specific odd thing,
right?
And at that point, I was like, all right, well, you know what? At the time, I didn't have anything going on musically, but I'm like, that's going to be a music project one day.
That's super cool. So let's talk a little bit about this tour you guys just got done doing. How many weeks were you guys gone on tour?
We were on the road for 6 weeks.
Nice. And what are some of the high points from the tour for you?
It was such a trip because we bought our own bus. It was this 1983 Ford, like, Econoline bus. Ironically, used to be a church bus, which was really delicious. this is kind of a part of the whole, this is kind of a low point, but also kind of a high point with the tour. It was the thing, on the way to the first show, it overheated. So that was how everything started. And then it kept overheating. We took it into this like amazing place in Spokane, this place called Jake's Garage. They were really cool, and they fixed it. But through the rest of the tour for the next 6 weeks, every day was like a different struggle with it, like watching it, making sure it didn't overheat, and kind of learning how to drive it. So it was had a mind of its own. It was like a Stephen King novel, but fortunately no one died.
Oh, that's good.
So that was interesting because it was like, it wasn't just hopping into a nice bus and just like, oh, let's just go to the next destination and not worry about it. It was kind of like this daily grind. But we feel pretty road hardened after that. Some of the highlights, this was definitely some interesting experiences. One of the coolest shows that we played was Machine Fest, which is in Colorado. And they had like battle bots that were shooting like flames and crushing washing machines and tossing them. It was like this amazing little festival out in Wellington, Colorado, where the guy who runs it is he's an engineer, so he knows all about the robotics side of it. So he just, this is a labor of love, and he just throws it once a year with a few industrial bands that he really likes, and has these big robots just blast everything. So that was, if you're in that area, you should definitely check it out. Wasteland Weekend, of course, is just unspeakably amazing. This is our second year playing there. For anyone who doesn't know what Wasteland Weekend is, it's a post-apocalyptic festival out in the middle of the Mojave Desert in California. It's like the last weekend of September. It's absolutely mind-blowing. And everyone there is super nice, super welcoming. It's such a unique environment. And honestly, this last year, which was the 10-year anniversary, this is probably the biggest crowd that we ever played in front of. They were just, everyone just came out. It was amazing.
That's cool. Is that the one where there's a lot of like Mad Max looking vehicles and stuff? And
Yeah, they have a car show. What's nice about all the vehicles that are there is they're not just vehicles that are done up aesthetically and they're like towed in on flatbeds or something. They all run, they all functional, and you can see them like during the daytime, especially when the city's kind of up and going. Down the main thoroughfares, you'll see all these cars driving around. And people just, yelling at you from on them, and you can you know, stick out your thumb and get a ride. It's really intense, but in like a really positive way.
Yeah, that sounds super cool. I've seen a lot of pictures and video from it, so it's got to be kind of surreal to actually be there and play and get to be in front of that crowd.
It is, and the thing is, like, it's so immersive. They do enforce a dress code, which maybe some people are like, oh, that's weird. It's like, no, but it makes it so you can really let your, like, Mad Max freak flag fly there. Like, just people go all out. And it really, for that period of time, you totally have this suspension of disbelief, and you just become part of that world. And it's really addictive. As soon as you leave, you already start. You just automatically start missing it. You miss all these people that maybe you only see once a year, but when you see them, it's like family.
Right. Very cool.
Yeah.
So what do you guys have? Obviously, you know, with the new album coming out, have you guys started talking or working on like tour plans for next year?
Yeah, we are. We are starting kind of like the beginning parts of it. I mean, if we get asked to come back to Wasteland, we'll always come back. We'll never turn that down.
Right.
That would be just foolish not to turn that down. We're working through our manager right now to get a tour agent, like booking agent, to handle it so it can be a little bit better planned out. You know, this was our first national tour, and it was ours. Like, we weren't on any bigger band's coattails or anything like that. So, you know, it was a huge learning, big learning situation each day. What not to do, what to do, you know, what markets seem to work, what don't. So next year we'll hit it just as hard. We'll go to more places. And this is something I like to stress to people.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, we were like, oh, we're going on the road. Where do you want us to play? And people want us to play their cities, which is great, and we want to. But unless they can, like, connect us with someone there, it's just like, I don't know what to tell you.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And I had a selfish reason to ask, because because I'm in Michigan, and about a half hour away from me in Battle Creek, Michigan, this will be year four this coming next summer, is Michigan Metal Fest, and it's the biggest metal festival in the state. And last year it was somewhere between 2,000-3,000 people came. Each year it's grown. This past year, they've had Devil Driver headline.
Nice.
2 years ago, they had Whitechapel headlined. This past August, Hatebreed headlined. So I would highly recommend, if you're going to be coming in the Michigan area, that would be a great festival for you guys to play. And I happen to know one of the guys that helps organize it, so I'd be happy to put you in contact with them if you have any interest.
That would be amazing. Yeah, we wanted to play Michigan, but we didn't have any, like, solid, like, Detroit connections and nothing. You know, it's hard when you're a smaller band, or, like, kind of just working your way up, is, you know, you have a lot of promoters that are like, oh, you know, we can't pay your guarantee, or, oh, you know, that night's already booked, or why should we book you guys? We don't know who you are.
Right.
It's a lot of that.
Yeah, it's all those questions, right? Yeah.
So having an in is that, and that's a huge part of it, and that's where booking tours becomes a lot easier. Is having an in is it's a cliche, but it's not what you know; it's who you know.
Right.
It's all about who you know.
Yep. Absolutely. Another one just to look out for is one called Ardent Entertainment, and they actually own a club there in Battle Creek called the Music Factory, and they have national touring acts come through like every week. So they and they do a lot of the booking themselves. So I'll send you some links to some stuff after the interview. So, because, you know,
yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, I mean, It's all about connections. I mean, that's why I love doing this. It's all, for me, it's all about networking and getting to talk to badass bands, you know, and singers like yourself. And, you know, that's, as you know, in the metal world, it's all about networking and working together, because otherwise nobody, it's hard to get very far if you don't work together.
Yeah. And there's so much petty, you know, egotism, right? You know, in any music scene,
yep.
For sure. And I will say that, you know, while there, every city will have its drama, the Portland metal scene, for the most part, is pretty, everyone gets along, okay. I mean, more or less, and people are pretty supportive. Like, they'll come out to your nights, they'll share your videos and things like that. So, yeah, I actually have to give my hats off to the Portland metal scene. They've always been really good to us.
Yep, excellent. So, shameless plug time. Where is a good place for people to find out more about the band? Social networking, websites, where are you guys at?
So, we are on all the various social networking sites. It's one... Even though it's kind of a long, silly name, at least we're never confused with any other band. So if you look up Dead Animal Assembly Plant, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook. I know we're on Twitter. I'm not on Twitter. I can honestly say I hate Twitter. But we're on there somewhere, and I think Eric runs it. We're also on YouTube. You can look for DAP Slaughterhouse. And we do have a website, deadanimalassemblyplant.com, but it's a little out of date, and I'm going to work with like a web designer to get it more up to date. You can also find all of our catalog of music at our Bandcamp page, so deadanimalassemblyplant.bandcamp.com, and it's all on there, the good, the bad, the ugly, the really ugly. There's some pretty rough stuff on there, but I don't care. It's all out there.
That's all about the progression of a band, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a little cringy to go back and listen to some of the older songs, but, you know, it's also kind of like, okay, well, this is where we started, and this is where we're at, so it helps.
Yeah, right on. You guys, because I haven't checked out your Bandcamp recently, do you guys have any vinyl out?
We don't. I would love to do that, because we, since we're completely independent, we do, you know, we have everything manufactured, paid for by ourselves.
Right.
I mean, what's nice about that is that it has become incredibly inexpensive, right. So independent artists can get things professionally made. We also have an endorsement through Dirtbag Clothing. Love those guys.
Yeah.
They print all of our shirts. They're like the sweetest guys. I love them to death. So we're pretty fortunate in that respect. Vinyl. I want to press vinyl, and maybe if we get picked up by a label, the next one will be pressed.
Right.
But it's expensive. Oh my God. It's so, like, any independent band that I see releases vinyl, like, kudos to them, because it is not cheap to get vinyls pressed.
Yeah, well, it is, right, so it's not cheap for a band, but so then in return, you have to charge enough to not only get your money back, but actually make a little bit off it to help fund your next thing. So, you know, next thing you know, you're charging $30 for an album.
Oh, yeah, you have to. I mean, yep. You know, it's thousands of dollars to get, like, just 100 vinyls pressed.
Right.
And if you want to start getting clever with your... the colors on the vinyl or anything like that, then just keep adding up that money.
right. You could do cassette tape. That's making a comeback too.
I don't understand. I understand vinyl. Vinyl's like, it's a work of art. You know, and people can argue saying it sounds really clean or sounds different. You know, and I respect that. I get vinyl. I don't understand cassettes because, like, that's all we had. Cassettes suck.
I know, but I'll tell you what, when a band puts out their, every once in a while, a band that I like will put out something on cassette, and I'm not going to listen to it probably, but I buy it just because, you know, it's $10 or something, and, you know, it's something the band put out, it's kind of cool, so, I don't know, it's just kind of nostalgic.
I guess that's it, like, it's total nostalgia factor, because, you know, record players, you know, a lot of people have them, but I don't know many people that have tape decks, so.
Right.
So, I mean, that is, like, something that just, like, sits on a shelf, and you're like, cool, I have their limited edition single for their blah. And this is like, all right. I mean, that's cool.
Yeah.
And it is cheap to make, so yeah. You know what? I'm poo-pooing it now, but at the same time, I probably will end up doing it because I'm just a sellout. I don't know.
I actually spent time and found a Walkman online so I could actually listen to them when I bought them.
The amazing quality of tape.
Yes. And I listened to it and went, okay, that was fun. But haven't touched it since. But
yeah. I think someone needs to push it further. Like, they need to go super old school and just do, like, Edison wax cylinders or something like that.
Reel to reel.
Yeah, that's where it's at. You just need to keep going back.
Yeah.
Like, do player piano stuff where it's like, you know, notches on a piece of paper. It's like, oh, that's how old school I am.
No, I get where you're coming from, though. It's kind of like video gamers, you know, going old school like a Nintendo. I'm sorry, I am never going to go back to a Nintendo to play a video game. I want the best graphics I can get. So it's kind of with music that you want the best sound you can get.
Yeah, I mean, I understand nostalgia, but one side of me is like, I get it, because we always want to hold on to that piece of our past where we remember it through rose-colored lenses and feel good about something.
Right.
But nostalgia is poison. And I think that, like, that permeates through, like, everything, whether it's, you know, music or TV, especially music. You know, like, you will see nostalgia bands from, like, the early 2000s that people don't really care about anymore, but they'll go on tour and they'll sell out venue after venue because people are addicted to nostalgia. Then you have, like, small up-and-coming bands or bands trying to claw their way up, and people are like, oh, I don't care. I don't. Why would I want to try new music when I have this 2000s-era band that reminds me of when I was in high school? I'd rather go see them.
Right, and they'll pay $200 a ticket to go see them, but they won't spend $10 to go to a local venue and see a band. Don't even get me started on that one.
It's just ridiculous. It's like these arena shows where, you know, you have, I can't even say bands. If it's a full band, that makes sense. But then you have, like, acts where it's, like, literally someone with a microphone and playing to a backing track, and they fill an arena.
Right.
It's like, you don't need that. And people are, like you said, are paying $200 a ticket to basically see karaoke. It's just like, what's going on?
Yeah. Yep. Bad name. So anyways, we could obviously, both of us could go on all night about that one, so we'll move along.
Okay. So, don't get me started.
I know, I did. It's my fault. I'm always curious when I talk to bands and band members, you know, what kind of influences they had in their life that got them to the music that they're making now. So kind of what were your influences, what are your influences kind of guide you to this point?
Well, the theatrical side, even before music was really any kind of passion of mine, I was a drama nerd. I mean, I loved acting. I did it in high school. I even lettered it in high school, and did it for a little bit after high school in, like, local theater. So I was, you know, shockingly, I was a very dramatic person. So then later in my 20s, when I actually started learning more of the music, like actually learning the programming side of it, I mean, that's when I wanted to bring in the horror element, because when I was younger, the bands that influenced me, like Skinny Puppy, Nine Inch Nails, early Manson, you know, Antichrist era Manson, when he just was like on top of everything, and just like all the dark, like that sinister elements to music that really I discovered in high school. That influenced me musically. Bands like Pig and KFDM, and, you know, these like weird industrial bands like Einstein and I About and stuff like that, or Tom Waits, or Fetus. So bands like that kind of influenced me musically, because they all kind of did what they wanted to do, not kind of based on anyone else's ideals.
Right.
They just did whatever they wanted. And if you liked it, cool. If you didn't, oh well. So that was my initial approach, but also is very amateurish of me because I didn't really know a lot. But then as I started bringing in more people in the band, that, changed the sound a lot, which is, it's nice to give up that, it's hard and nice to give up that control of your baby. You're like, okay, well, this is my baby, but I need to kind of share it so people have a sense of ownership and can help it grow. So from that drama influence and those early musical influences, that kind of was what propelled me. But then, everyone else's input and how they interpreted songs and meanings and just the whole aesthetic of the band, everyone else in the band over the years has really helped to make it something way more than I ever thought it was going to be.
Yeah,
so, convoluted answer or not?
No, that's awesome, and I kept saying, "Please say Kim FDM," and you did. So thank you.
Okay. I love Kim FDM. Like all Kim FDM is just like amazing. Anything like with Raymond Wass and Enesh, and it's just they're the best.
They're one of my favorite bands of all time, and I don't know if you've heard their new album, but their new album is fucking badass.
I haven't. I know Raymond Watts is on it. Raymond Watts is like one of my biggest musical influences, just of all time. The way he writes and just how he hams everything up. So then I heard that Raymond Watts had just did a song with Kim FDM for the new album. So if for me, the reason I have to go listen to that, because I may be biased, but those were always my favorite King FM songs were with Raymond Wass.
Yeah, well, I highly recommend. I've listened to that entire album over and over and over again, probably 30 times now. I can't stop listening to it. So definitely recommend it.
Well, good. All right, good. Cause I'm glad because music can be very dodgy, and especially as a band goes out through the years, sometimes you question what they're doing. So it's good to hear like a good recommendation.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, and I get that, but I also understand, a band, you can't play, it's like when people get on Metallica and say, oh my god, they sold out, they changed their sound. I'm like, they've been doing this for a long time, they got to change it up. I can't imagine, I feel like they'd get bored after a while if they didn't do something different once in a while,
Yeah, it's a tough line to toe, because you, as a musician, you want to keep pushing yourself and challenging yourself, but at the same time, you don't want to isolate the crowd, the audience, the people that have like helped push you along through the years. So it's like you want to be able to kind of like explore all the different avenues, but at the same time, maintain some kind of consistency. So it's tough, because right. Either you risk sounding stale, like you're just writing the same album over and over and over again, or if you deviate too far off the path, then people get mad that you're like, don't sound like this album,
or
don't sound like how it used to sound.
So right.
You're damned if you do, damned if you don't, pretty much.
Yeah, that's why I like what you said earlier. At some point, you have to just make the music, that you want to make, and just kind of deal with it, I guess, right?
Yeah, and that's like when people say what selling out is. I'm sure everyone has their own definition of what selling out is, but it's like, to me, selling out is being disingenuous. If you are writing music that is commercially successful, but it's from your heart, it's like who you are, well, that's not selling out, because you just happen to write stuff that a bunch of people like. If you're writing stuff for the sole purpose, like inside you're like, this is all bullshit, but
I know I'm going to make money.
Yeah, but I know I'm going to make money, or I know this is what's popular right now, or I know this is what's in vogue. It's just like, that's selling out. It doesn't matter how much money you're making.
Right.
It's like you're selling out your artistic integrity behind it. I think that's what selling out is. And if you're Metallica and you may not like the musical direction or, even some of their stances on things, but if everything that they're writing because this is what they want to do, well, then they're not selling out. But if they're writing it just because they want to sell records, then yeah, they can eat a dick.
Exactly. So I want to go back to your tour you did again that you guys just did recently. So what's and I asked this question with what you're willing to talk about, but what's like something really crazy that happened at a live show that you guys did?
A live show. That's a good question. I'm trying to, now it's like trying to replay all the different shows through my head. And it's like, okay, what's something crazy that happened?
It doesn't have to be bad either.
Oh yeah. No, I'm trying to think. There's always, like, we always have to be injured. Like, there's always has to be someone that gets injured on tour. And it's usually me because I'm careless and I jump around a lot on stage and I'm usually messing myself up in some way. I'm trying to think. I don't know. My mind is drawing a blank.
That's okay. Well, let me switch to a different question, because this is like the most important question, and I say this sarcastically, that I'm going to ever ask you is, for the band, who spends the most time in front of the mirror before you guys go on stage?
That's a good question, because we all spend a lot of time in front of the mirror, just the makeup.
Right.
But we've gotten even the makeup down pretty fast. So I would say if we're being extra meticulous, either it's me or it'd be Rebecca would spend the most time in front of the mirror. And this is like, depending on how exacting we're wanting to be with the makeup. It all comes down to the makeup.
Right on. But I mean, being the lead singer, I mean, it would make sense that you're the one that spends the most time.
Well, you would think that, but I'm not as vain as I pretend to be.
Was not meaning it to mean that.
Well, but let's be honest. I mean, a lot of singers, you know, you kind of have to be an ego basket case to be in a band. I mean, people can, like, pretend that it's not a part about, you know, the adulation or the attention. If that was the case, then no one would ever release any albums or do anything live.
Good point.
They would just sit in their bedrooms and write all the amazing music in the world to themselves. So you kind of have to be a little arrogant to be in a band. So let's not kid ourselves. None of us are innocent here.
So I have a question from the chat room, and this kind of plays off earlier. You kind of mentioned, you know, kind of bringing the whole horror piece to the band. So Megan in the chat wants to know, what are your favorite horror movies?
Oh, my favorite horror movies, I mean, and this is probably the nostalgia part again, is a lot of movies from the 80s that I grew up with. Like the one that scared the bejesus out of me and just traumatized me throughout my childhood years was the original Amityville Horror. Just some of the scenes in it, like Poltergeist, like all these movies that just were just beautifully done and still stand up, I think. Obviously I grew up loving all the schlocky slasher flicks like Friday the 13th and Nightmare on Elm Street. Although I will say my favorite slasher, if you want to call him a slasher character, is Pinhead. The Hellraiser series is just, well, to a certain point, they made a lot of garbage Hellraiser movies, but the original ones with the original Pinhead, Doug Bradley, those are by far my favorite, because they're just, you know, beautifully done. So, I could talk about horror movies forever, but I feel like just the horror movies I grew up with just really sunk their teeth into me, and I definitely drove me from even a young age until now, being an adult kid.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad Megan asked that question, because I personally am not a horror movie a fan. Like, I don't
watch. The interview is over. That's it. No, I'm done talking to you.
No. I have nothing to add to the conversation because I don't find, like, any pleasure in watching them. So I'm more of I need to have lots of explosions and naked bodies flying around kind of guy for movies, so.
Did you say naked bodies flying around?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, there you go. That's horror movies, especially horror movies in the 80s, which is funny because...
Good point. Lots of topless scenes.
It is, because it was that whole loosely, like moralistic message. There was this, like, oh, you know, gratuitous sex and drugs and being irresponsible will get you killed.
Right.
That's good pretty point. Much what the message was.
I never thought of it that way. That is, yeah, that's pretty accurate.
Yeah, there's, I mean, I think that's kind of what I always thought was clever about the horror movies of, like, the 70s and 80s, is if you look kind of, like, beneath the layers of the gore and the sex, there's some social context, like, subtext to it. It's, you know, like, a lot of the zombie movies were, like, you know, an indictment against commercialism and capitalism, stuff like that. So it's actually pretty clever when you get past just the surface gore and boobs.
Maybe I should give another shot. Maybe I should give it another try.
Watch the Hellraiser movies. If you have not watched the Hellraiser movies, I cannot recommend them highly enough.
Okay. But you're
especially the second one.
You're talking about the original, though, right?
Well, I mean, so there's the first four.
Many? Okay.
There are. Oh, there's so many of them. Because they even after the original Pinhead... you ducked out. They made a whole bunch more. They're just hot trash. I'm not even going to talk about them. They're the equivalent of that of the fourth Indiana Jones movies,
gotcha.
Which will go unnamed.
Yep. Yeah. Perfect. All right. Shameless plug time again. Where can people find out more about the band, social networking, and such? Where's the best place to go?
Best place to go. Facebook and Instagram are updated the most, so you look up Dead Animal Assembly Plant. We're pretty easy to find if you remember that name. On YouTube, you can look us up. We have all of our music videos. We have a bunch of live footage from, like, Wasteland and some spots on tour. And you can find all of our music at our Bandcamp page. So it's deadanimalassemblyplant.bandcamp.com. It's all on there. And yeah, all over the place. Try to be active online, although it's yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Just so you know, I have once we're done with this interview, I have three tracks. Of course, I'm gonna play "Rise with Me," but I'm gonna play also. I'm also have lined up "God's Gonna Cut You Down," and I also have "Old Fashioned Hellfire." I love those three tracks. So.
Oh, cool! Thank you.
Those three tracks will be up here shortly. And so is there anything else? Is there anything we haven't talked about specifically about the band, anything upcoming with the album that you want to make sure that the fans and the listeners know?
Not that we haven't already covered. So the new album is done. We'll be out soon. Hopefully. We have the new video, which is in post right now, so it's being edited. Once that's done, then we'll arrange a whole, like, online premiere for that. And then, yeah, next year we're going to hit the road again and just tour, plug the new album. You know, it's been nice learning and playing new songs live. Even though none of the older songs have gotten old, it's just nice to play new music. So
yeah, absolutely.
Just keep your grapes peeled, and hopefully if you want us to play a city near you, get us in contact with a promoter, a venue. We'd love to play there, but we just need to work it out.
Yeah, perfect. Well, wish you best of luck with the album, and like I said, I'll send you some links to that to some different areas that might be of help to you guys. And then, also, I may have mentioned this at the beginning, but I also am recording this interview, and I will have it up on my podcast channel. And as soon as I get it up on the podcast channel, I will send you guys a link so you can share my podcast for my interviews, is on Spotify, Apple Music, pretty much any place that the podcasts are. You'll be able to hear the interview. So that's pretty something recently new that I'm pretty excited about.
Awesome. Well, fantastic. Okay. Thank you for the interview. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time. Please tell everybody else in the band I said hello. And we'll continue to follow and continue to promote you guys. And, look forward to seeing what's next.
All right. I look forward to it. And then, we'll do this again once the album's out.
Oh, I'd be happy to. Absolutely. 100%. Okay. Cool, man. Have a great night.
Thank you, too.
Yeah, take care. Bye.